According to the U.S. Census Bureau, more than 46 million Americans are living in poverty. That's the highest number in the 52 years that the Bureau has been tracking it. And given the long recession, slow job growth, and cuts in state services, that number will probably rise.
But the question is why? Why are there such high rates of poverty in the world's richest country? That's among the big questions that Peter Edelman tackles in his new book, So Rich, So Poor, Why It's So Hard to End Poverty in America. Edelman began working on the problem as a young advisor to Senator Robert F. Kennedy back in the 1960s. He also worked for President Bill Clinton and famously quit in protest when Clinton signed the 1996 welfare reform law. Peter Edelman spoke last night at the Kennedy Library. He joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
You have some figures in this book that are truly shocking and put the problem of poverty in perspective. And I wonder if you could just give me sort of your top two or three figures that almost provide a wake-up call to what's going on out there.
Three numbers. One is about how many low-wage jobs we have in this country. And that means that 103 million people, a third of the American people, have incomes that are below twice the poverty line, below $44,000 for a family of four. That's figure number one. Figure number two is at the other end, two and three. We now have 20.5 million people in what we call deep poverty, below half the poverty line, below $11,000 for a family of four, and that's doubled over the last 35 years. And even more stunning, we have 6 million people whose only income is from food stamps. That means that they have an income, if they have a family of three, of $6,000, a third of the poverty line.
Only food stamps. So that means they're not living on, they don't have any other cash income at all. What's the significance of that number? I mean, obviously, who can live on that money, but what's the significance of just food stamps?
The significance of that number is that we've torn a huge hole in our safety net for mothers and children in this country. The welfare law that was enacted in 1996 has proven to be of no help in half or more of the states. Half the states, less than 20% of poor children are receiving welfare. And so it turns out that when you only have about 4 million people in the whole country on welfare, that there's going to be a large number who only get food stamps.
Peter Edelman, you've been tracking this problem for a long, long time, as we mentioned, starting back in the 60s with RFK. How has the nature of poverty in America changed since the days you first began looking at it so closely?
The biggest thing is that the largest age group who are poor are children. And, of course, the reason for that is that their parents are poor, and the reason for that is primarily the huge wave of low-wage jobs that we've had going back 40 years to when we lost the higher-paying industrial jobs. So that's the major change. The issues about race and gender are with us, continue to be with us. The elderly are much better off. That's the other part of that demographic group story. And then the other big change is this increase at the bottom, which is really just so stunning.
You famously quit the Clinton administration when he signed the welfare reform law, as we mentioned. As he put it, he ended welfare as we know it. The central idea in that law was that welfare would no longer be a guaranteed benefit. It would be limited. People would have to get back to work. So there was sort of a carrot and a stick. Isn't it politically necessary to approach this discussion in that way, at least in the current political climate?
It's not only politically correct, it's substantively right that the way welfare should be is that the vast majority of people who were ever on welfare go back to work or go to work. But in most cases, it's go back to work. Most people who are ever poor in this country are poor for a short period of time, and the safety net is to keep them from falling all the way to the bottom. So that's all correct, but the problem is, insofar as people do have needs, we're not meeting them. It was really proven by this recession, where the welfare rolls responded just a tiny bit, went from 3.9 million to 4.4 million people, just 1.5% of our people. Food stamps really helped. went from 26 million to 46 million people because you have a legal right to get food stamps and you have no legal right to get welfare. So, again, we've torn that huge hole and we need to pay attention and fix it.
One of the things you say that's changed over the years is that folks in Washington no longer really want to even use the word poverty. You say even President Obama is reluctant to utter the P word. Why? What's happening?
I think it must be what happens when they do the polling. Let's be clear that President Obama has done a lot for low-income people, added 16 million adults to Medicaid, which is historic in its importance, well over $150 billion in the Recovery Act, the stimulus legislation in 2009, and race to the top on education. So he's done things, but they don't like to talk about it. We need to have a debate and a discussion in this country that says the word out loud and says that in the richest country in the world, we shouldn't have these levels of poverty. The disparities now between top and bottom, and by the way, the top, we all know, have made out like bandits.
And I wanted to ask you about that because we do have this growing income inequality, huge wealth at the top. When it comes to confronting poverty, how important is it to tackle that yawning inequality and to deal with that huge amount of wealth at the top?
I think it's hugely important because the bottom in and of itself shouldn't exist in a country that's as wealthy as this. But to see these disparities, to see that over the last 40 years, the entire bottom half, not just those who were really, really poor, have had their wages just be stuck. Mm-hmm. And at very low levels, well, the economy did grow, and all of the growth went to the people at the very top. And we need to face up to that. We need to say that the accompanying political power that goes with those increases in the wherewithal of the people at the top is really corroding our democracy. And I do think fundamentally our democracy is at stake here.
You say, you make a point at the end of your book that really struck me. You say that the American people have the power to do something about this, if they will use it, you say. But you write, as long as middle-income voters think they have more in common with the people at the top than with people at the bottom, we are cooked. What are you getting at there?
I think people, we all want better for our children than we've had for ourselves. That's a natural human instinct. And people are reluctant to face up to what this flood of low-wage jobs really means. And so if you look at the mobility figures, they're quite frightening because there aren't enough higher-paying jobs for people to actually move up and get to, even if they have the education and the skills. And it's a hard sell, but people need to understand that this is a structural problem in our labor market. It's not their own fault. It's not because they didn't try hard enough or didn't get the breaks. It's the whole system that's sticking it to them. And if we can get that across, then they can come out and vote and use their people power to change the political outcomes.
You offer a number of prescriptions that we don't have time to get into in just the few minutes that we have, but what's the single most effective program or policy the government could enact right now or in the short term to help raise folks out of poverty?
The single most important thing is actually the people at the very bottom who are just so incredibly left out there. Getting the safety net at least up to some level where people can survive. But beyond that, it's a combination of all the things you do to get people who are working and trying as hard as they can to get a decent income and also to invest in our children so that they have a better chance.
And Peter Edelman, despite the gravity of this situation, which you've been focused on for many, many years, you write that you're an optimist.
I am, because I think if you look at our history, the combination of the fact that in the Progressive Era, for example, when people were sick of the robber barons, sick of the Gilded Age, they went to the voting place and they turned those people out and changed the power dynamic in our politics. And secondly, we have done a lot to help low-income people, and we can do more.
Peter Edelman, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it. That's Peter Edelman. He's a professor at Georgetown University Law Center. He was an advisor to Senator Robert F. Kennedy. He served in the Clinton administration, and he's the author of So Rich, So Poor, Why It's So Hard to End Poverty in America. Listeners, let us know what you think, and you can find an excerpt from the book at radioboston.org.
Well, Peter Edelman talked about a flood of low-wage jobs. Many people believe those jobs don't even provide a living wage. So we'll look back at 100 years of the minimum wage. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.